RevolutionRadioFreedomSlips.com, where you don't need to expect us. We're already here. And coming at you now, it is Evolution with Miss Eva Moore.
And our mystery producer, Mr. Stephen Travesty. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is November 24th, 2013. Tonight, I have a very, very special guest, Mr. Kiwi Vinny Eastwood. Thank you for being here tonight, Vinny. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Just like a kiwi, I too am fruity.
Well, you know what? Tonight is actually, it's a very meaningful show for me. You were brought to my attention April 4th, 2012. You did an interview with Bill, and this was before his arrest, and he did a great interview. You guys did a great job covering, you know, the whole SEAL Team 6, you know, cover up with the helicopter. And, you know, just recently there's been a lot more evidence coming out, or questioning, open questioning around, you know, whether or not bin Laden was or wasn't already dead before the, you know, multifaceted cover up and movie premiere production of lies that they tried to spin. Basically, Bill introduced me to you, and so he wanted to say hello to you. I saw him this morning, and I told him that you were going to be on the show and how great that was for me, and he said hello and thank you for everything, and that he was able to get his information out through you over, you know, 2 years ago. So thank you.
Well, I was probably just a tiny part of that. Bill went on a lot of programs, didn't he?
He did, but, you know, it helps when you get cross-pond representational.
Well, I guess so. I mean, no promotion's bad promotions, is it?
No. I wanted to state that I've been following you, and I remember he introduced you to me as the handsome Vincent Eastwood, and that you were like the Kiwi sex symbol of alternative media.
Well, if they're it.
I'd gladly
accept that title, you know, watching some of the videos of the other truthers in New Zealand who are let's just say they haven't had enough dress-collared shirts and shaving appliances donated to them by very generous listeners. And that's basically the only difference, you know.
Well,
we're all living in Harbiton, man. Come on.
Yeah, you've got a real...
It's more like Mordor down here in New Zealand, man. Like, honestly,
that's where they filmed, right? They filmed there.
It's this giant volcanic astral wasteland, somehow situated to be the jewel of the South Pacific that the British Empire just loves raping very forcefully. And there's an awful lot of like natural parks and beautiful rainforests and everything like that. They're about to be cut down. And all of these nice clean oceans. All of these nice, beautiful, clean, blue oceans that are about to be mined for about deep sea oil. And we've got these wonderful forests as well that are having poison dropped on them because it's good for the possums. You know, there's just all wonderful masses of natural beauty that's been corrupted in New Zealand, and a wonderfully transparent government that isn't transparent at all, according to Transparency International New Zealand. Basically, here's how you want to understand New Zealand. You want to understand New Zealand, you've got to understand America. What's America? It's one of the big, beautiful countries, right? And you've got an awful lot of different variants between the landscapes. You've got all bunches of really, really nice people. And you've got a whole bunch of natural resources that the elite want. And so they dumb you down. They introduce a whole bunch of control mechanisms and policies and poisons and stuff into the environment. And then you're fracked, and then you're in their clutches. Basically, that's it.
Terraforming for some other species. 101. Yeah.
Well, yes. You know what? That's what transhumanists believe, that we're going to kind of somehow merge with technology, and that to be human would be about your access to technology rather than how human you are.
Well, let's back up here, Mr. Vincent, Mr. Sex Symbol Kiwi Extraordinaire. We What I want to try and capture tonight are the subtler sides of Mr. Eastwood. You know, much like Bruce Wayne and Batman have some coexistence, but one doesn't always get introduced to the same audience. So you kind of have this really interesting cross diverse way of showing up in the world. I wanted to go back though. You and I were speaking previously a few days ago, and you'd mentioned that you got into this about 6 years ago. So this is 2 years. So I met you into your fourth, well, vicariously met you into your fourth year. Can we back up a little bit? Can you tell us how you got started? What, you know, backhanded compliment forced your consciousness awake enough to want to jump into this arena? What was it that brought you into this? Because it takes a lot of dedication, and usually it's some kind of faceplant trauma that triggers the how dare you and the rise of a soul. So I'd love to hear your story.
Well, it's a story of desperation, of neglect, of absolute monstrous scumbaggery, you know, to be discussed for eons to come. Okay. Long story short, got busted for 13 grams of weed. And instead of going to jail for up to... And instead of going to jail for up to 8 years for 13 grams of weed for a first offense with no diversion of any kind at the age of, like, 20, luckily, the cops gave away my confession by not advising me that I had a right to remain silent before they arrested me.
Oh, you lucky bugger.
Oh, yeah. And it cost $10,000 worth of lawyer for my mother on a credit card, which she still hasn't paid back and has lost her house virtually because of it.
Oh, no.
You know? So I'm somebody who people look out for, but they often suffer as a result of looking out for me to a large degree. Especially
are you a Pisces? When's your birthday?
No, I don't think it matters because I'm a Capricorn. All right.
Oh, you're a Capricorn. Okay.
Yeah, Capricorns
in it for the long haul.
Yeah. Capricorns don't care about star signs, and
star signs.
Yeah, like being a Capricorn, right, for example.
That's all right. We do. We care about you though, so we want to know. Inquiring minds.
If you say so, and
that's what happened after people don't care about what race they are.
Well, I have an uncle who says that he doesn't believe in mayonnaise.
Doesn't believe in it.
Like, he doesn't believe.
Nope.
Like, yeah, I didn't know that the existence of mayonnaise was part of somebody's belief structure. I mean, there's some crazy religions that deny all sorts of stuff out there these days. You know?
Well, let me guess. When the Anunnaki show up, he's going to be all for it, right?
He
doesn't believe in mayonnaise, but the Anunnaki, yep, they're coming.
I've never had a conversation with him about the Anunnaki, so I couldn't tell you.
You got to find something that he believes in, which is more absurd than not believing in mayonnaise. That way, it's a story.
He was a justice of the peace and like a former mayor of a decent chunk of the city, or councillor, or something of high esteem like that.
So let's ask. Wait, I got to get this in perspective too. What's your Chinese astrology? What sign are you in the Eastern?
You know,
philosophy?
I thought you were telling me a story about 6 years rather than 5,000 years of Chinese philosophy history. All right.
Boy, this is important.
No, but maybe we're getting the point.
How
Confucius.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Oh wow, you're just a pup.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. I don't know why. Because I struggle to be taken seriously, you know. Surprisingly enough, you know. I mean, how could you not? And
I don't believe that. But anyways, go on.
Yeah. Well, I think this stems from my family as well, because I'm the youngest of five kids.
I understand.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So, in terms of getting attention or being paid heed of and that kind of thing, no. So naturally, I became a conspiracy theorist because it's familiar territory.
It's hard to find somebody who's really dedicated to you know fighting the conspiracies and the tyranny out there. You know, being a part of the alternative truth movement, everything like that. That is that young. You know, I'm 33, and I feel like a pup considering like. You know, the average age of my peers at this station, you know, and I feel like, you know, because I feel more like I'm 18, I always have, you know, and I feel like I more cater to such a young crowd. So, you know, 28 years old in this movement, it is kind of a gem.
Well, my appeal is actually predominantly, but according to the YouTube rankings, and I can probably project this over the percentages of the on-air and listeners and what have you, it's about 80% of my listeners are between 40 and 65. So the average listener is basically twice my age.
Wow. Mm. What was the age gap between you and your next sibling?
I don't know, a couple of years, like maybe three.
Okay, and is there more? Do you have how many?
I think my eldest sister is like 35 now.
Were they into like conspiracy stuff or like?
No. None of my family are really into this stuff. I mean, my brother's sort of. He's kind of on his way there. He studied chiropractic, which is kind of alternative.
Yeah. That's hanky.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had this faceplant trauma. You were harangued by the law. Now, at this point, did you start to investigate to the private side of law and business?
A friend of mine there had introduced me that year to Bill Hicks and Michael Rupert, I think, from thewilderness.com. He showed me a documentary called The Truth and Lies of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And also Michael Moore's film Fahrenheit 9/11 came out that year as well. So I was just kind of like, yeah, like whatever media I got introduced to really influenced me really massively that year. And I watched documentaries about cannabis and had all sorts of different experiences with people down there. And you know, I was basically a changed man. And by the time I got busted, I still believed in the system, and I still believed that cops told the truth. And what was funny is that even though I admitted all the evidence against me, they still made up even more evidence because they couldn't bring themselves to admit that they used six cops, a dog, a couple of cars, and hours of police time to get a dude with 13 grams of weed on him.
Oh my god!
It was quite funny, actually. The guy in front of me what did he have? He had sexual assault, resisting arrest, and he was growing five cannabis plants. All right, comes up for sentencing, 150 hours community service. I go up, possession of 13 grams worth of sale of cannabis. You know, possession for supply, 300 hours community service. And I was lucky that I didn't go to jail for a first offense. What the hell is wrong with the system? And that during that time, when you're arrested, your whole life hangs in the balance. You got nothing. I had my first panic attack when the police cut my necklace off. My mother gave it to me, greenstone and Māori culture. It's sacred. Connects you to your home and your heart kind of thing. And they cut that off and I had a full-on panic attack. My legs gave out on me. I went down, I was choking, I was kind of, you know, pretty freaking cut up. And these cops didn't care. They're just like, oh, snap out of it. You know, my legs wouldn't even work. They had to carry me around and stuff. You know, I was, I basically turned into a stone, more or less. They fingerprinted me and mugshotted me and everything. You just look at it all, it's just blank. There's no spirit there, there's no life, there's no nothing. I had to basically shut down in order to deal with this experience that I was doing, you know, like an animal in shock. Mm-hmm. It was quite horrific, and it taught me a lot about how you can make yourself a stone so that you cannot feel anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I just kind of got into
I've been
like
there.
You need to be able to have that skill because sometimes reality is a bit too much. And that's why I advise people to escape it as often as possible, preferably 5 days a week for up to 2 hours at thevinnieeswoodshow.com. Because
very well if you played, lose, sir.
Because if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts, right?
Well,
Because the world is run by a ruthless bunch of criminal sociopathic motherfuckers that'll kill you, torture you, and rape you in your sleep and what have you, doesn't mean you can't have a few laughs about it. After all, it's just the end of the world.
Well, this is what I wanted to capture. Most people are familiar with your genius sense of humor. However, not a lot of them understand the very cathartic artist that you are and how effective you are at channeling some of that heaviness into an artistic expression. But I want to ask you one more question about the initial faceplant trauma. How long did it take you from that incident and having it come to a conclusion where you're released, free to go, and it's all done and said, before you started to put together that you wanted to become an alternative media person and start to document and speak out on the internet? How long did that take you to transition?
Well, from that faceplant trauma to getting into talk radio, that's actually a couple of years, because me starting doesn't mean me starting in talk radio, because I was a street activist before doing the talk radio bit. I was offered a show. There's a whole bunch of plans of the stories, and we're never going to get through it.
just trying to see, like, so you were arrested, what, around 20?
Yeah. Arrested around 20, and then I took a year off, did off my community service and everything like that, worked on vineyards in Waiheke, did some construction jobs and stuff. But after that, I think I then got a job as a salesman and went back to university in Auckland this time, you know, so it's close to home, not down in the South Island in Dunedin where you watch your olive oil freeze at room temperature. I'm not joking, by the way. What was interesting about university in Auckland is that it was after I'd watched all these documentaries and started to really kind of look into things just a little bit deeper, a little bit further, very gradually at that point, I started to realize that nothing that they were teaching me had any relevance to anything, and that it was boring and it was impractical and it didn't make any sense to me. And that it was really compounded for me when I did a anti-television discourse essay and used all the required reading to actually prove my case that television ain't really that good for you. But because the establishment's ideology is that television is good for you because it brings people together in a homogenous freaking soup in a single silo mentality, that it's a good thing, and therefore they gave me a D. And I was, this is the best essay I've ever written in my life. And I was like, this is BS. I'm getting the frack out of here. I'm going to start working at the salesman job even more. I'm going to make heaps of money instead, you know. Mm-hmm. Start making heaps of money. Become the number one salesman for 6 months solid, on the top of the boards. Nobody can freaking touch me.
What were you selling?
I was selling toll call packages. You know those telemarketer motherfuckers who call you up and then when you're having tea, and then they've got about maybe 30 seconds to get your attention in order to sell you something that you never heard of and probably didn't believe in before they started talking to you. I was that dude.
Oh, so that's how you developed your rapport. 50%. Your spoken word rapport. How to get your message in with a 1-2 punch.
Pretty much. You have a look at my phone records. We'd have these big printouts of telephone book pages, and you just run through the big blow up version and just cross them off or tick them if you sold them and whatever. And I averaged it out between the people who actually answered the phone. About 50% of those people who actually answered the phone said yes. The average was 1 in 16.
Very interesting. All right. So
now, because I was so good at that, they promoted me, but I told them that I didn't want to do sales anymore because I was sick of freaking always constantly calling people that you don't know, having no relationships or anything like that. I actually wanted to help train the other people to sell like I was doing, so I could make more money for the company. And they said, yeah, whatever, we'll give you this job as a business account manager. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sure enough, it was just another freaking sales job, except I was selling to businesses who were even less likely to give you the time of day. And so I basically just gave up on doing the work entirely because I told them that this wasn't what I wanted in the first place. So what I started doing is digging around the company, and I figured out that there's a hell of a lot wrong with it. And it almost every single employee has problems and gripes and so on and so forth. So I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company. And just like when I wrote my essay about what was wrong with television, they gave it a second glance and they gave me a D, or in this case an F, which means fired. Within 5 minutes, you know, and taken down to the cafe next door, signed down a piece of paper, pay me 6 weeks' pay to leave that minute, pretty much. run up to my desk, grab all my stuff. Great, I've had a summer holiday. Then the missus got really effed off with me because I wasn't making any money and she had to make ends meet for us. So I went and I got another sales job with another bunch of stupid douchebags who were just absolute scum, who were paying me $15 for what another guy was paying me $180. So we went into business with that other guy who was paying me $180, except he was a psychopath, which means on a Friday night he'd give me a call, tell me to get up off my mate's couch, put the beer down, and go and grab a pen and a piece of paper in order to write down the number of a client to call on Monday.
Wow.
And he could have just texted me on Monday.
What did you take in school? What did you take? What was your focus when you first ventured into the world?
Mostly ecstasy and other hallucinations. You know? No, I'm kidding.
Yes. Okay, yes. So what did you take? What did you focus? What did you think you were going to do with your life? You know, with all that pressure.
Honestly, I wanted to be a filmmaker.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I took film and media studies, and you know how much filmmaking I actually wound up doing in film and media studies? Zero. You know how much things I actually came up with in film and media studies that have ever been of any use in any of my filmmaking that I've ever done today? Zero. And I started to realize there ain't no freaking filmmaking being studied in film and media studies. This is all bull. This is all crap. I don't care. I'm getting the frack out of here. And so anyway, I wound up quitting my last job. Because the guy paid me more, even though he was a psychopath, I decided I could quit. So I took my last paycheck, which was about $4,000 cash in hand for the month, and I took my bonuses for the month as well, which was $11,900 worth of shopping mall vouchers that we've got here in New Zealand called Westfield. And managed to live off that for quite a while. But then when money ran out, I got pretty depressed. So I went to a doctor and said, Mr. Doctor, I'm very depressed. And he said, put the lime in the coconut and drink them both up and call me in the morning. And it did relieve my bellyache because he gave me a sickness benefit, which allowed me to scrounge $200 from the government from which I could finance my operation to frack them. Because
this
I used my
$11,900
worth of Westfield shopping vouchers
to get myself
a camera and a computer. And pay for the internet connections and just the fridge and stuff. But I was going out to protests and public meetings almost every other day and filming the stuff and then editing the videos when I got home and uploading them and started doing a few dance parties here on the side, making videos for them, taking a little bit of money just so I could finance my operation. I designed DVDs and designed the covers and
everything.
No, I don't know what a great DJ once said on Facebook. All these other DJs are thinking like they're really great, talented musicians. All you do is press the play button every now and again, you dick.
Yeah.
So yes, I am a good DJ. And the thing that happened was because I realized that I could actually make money off of this. This is my idea. I was like, whoa. I need to actually make money off of telling the truth. How do I do that? I did it as a salesman. I told people the truth that I could save them money. They did have their money saved. I never lied to anybody, even though other people were lying around me and making their money that way. But what I wanted to do was actually turn truth rather than lies into a revenue stream, something that can actually reinforce itself, something that can grow organically. And when you're in desperate times, it calls for desperate measures. So you start asking people for help. I ask people to donate $5 a month to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You know, go in there, subscribe. Some people give 10 bucks, some people give 20, some people give 50. And, you know, when I started that, this is what I thought was a good idea because what happens in society is people are always buying something for themselves. They're not often chipping in to buy something for somebody else. And if I could turn that into a business model, not only could I ethically take people's money and spend it on exposing scumbaggery and making people laugh and helping activists that have really even worse traumas than I've ever conceived of in my life, helping them through these dark times, helping get their message out so that people can come to their aid as many people had come to mine. I think that is a sustainable business model, one that's based upon a community and delivery of results rather than a packaged, processed product with no with nothing genuine left in it.
Yes, I agree. I concur completely. I wanted to ask you where you see the internet going, since this is such a key factor to the sustainability of such a livelihood, and also facilitation of new people, as you know, in the Matrix they say pop, you know, when people take that pill and open their eyes and start to see it, they need to reach out and they need a touchstone. I've been hearing, you know, as we all have, murmurs of the internet being, you know, under certain regulations coming down. I think there's like something called TCC or something like that, where there's a bunch of countries who are now forming a unified force to regulate the internet. China is not involved, and neither is Russia, where they're basically going to cater to those who have trademarks, register trademarks, and you know, then whatever the next version is. Have you heard these murmurs, and what do you think is going to happen, and how do you project? Because one of the things I love about you, Vinny, is you're really quite worldly. You know, and I would love to talk on some specifics later, but let's start with the internet. What are your thoughts? And we have probably 2 minutes before we go to break, just to give you a heads up.
Are you sure? It looked like he said 1 minute to break or so. Well, my thoughts on the internet in 2 minutes, where it's going. Well, I think all business should really start to become even more internet based. All right, really, there's no such need for schools anymore. There's no need for storefronts anymore. There's no need for centralization of human activity whatsoever. If we've got enough internet, nobody even really need be in cities for that matter. You know, we could all be living off in the country, and every single time we want to talk to somebody, we've got a full frickin' digital video cam and everything with them if we want. That's where I think the internet should go, but where I think it's going is for more intense regulation by scumbaggery agencies that are also thwarted at all times by people who don't want their internet freedom taken off them, who are more or less trying to fight the good cause of freedom in not so many words. And unfortunately, these powers keep getting taken to surveil people increasingly, target them, individuals specifically, because it's often an individual that can override an entire apparatus, isn't it? Whistleblowers are the perfect example of that, so they're going to be cracked down on hard. It's absolutely not looking good. It's not looking good. But, hey, there's a saying in Batman, things are always darkest before the dawn.
Nicely timed. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Eva Moore. This is Evolution on Revolution Radio. We're simulcasting on Wolf Spirit Radio, thanks to Mr. Pop's Dave Corso and No Borders in the UK. Today's date is November 24th, 2013. We're at the bottom of the first hour, and tonight my guest is the one, the only, Mr. Vincent Eastwood. Thank you so much for being here. Before the break, we were just talking about the internet and the specific targeting of whistleblowers and, you know, WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, that perhaps they're going to try and maneuver something like Napster, you know, where anybody who's putting out information, if it's not their trademarked information, then they're going to try and, like, lasso you into some kind of three-strike rule, and then you're off the internet. That's some of the words I've heard thrown around. Vinny, we've talked quite a bit about your origins and how you got started. To this date, who would you say was one of the top two, top three interviews that you've done? Who have you really enjoyed when you look back and say, wow, I did that?
I don't know, probably David Icke, G. Edward Griffin, and Cliff High.
Awesome. I was suspecting they were on there somewhere. And who
the John Perkins ones. The John Perkins one was really good too. In fact, there's a reason I did that featured interviews page on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com is because there's so many really, really awesome guests that we've had on the show. The Tila Tequila interview was very interesting.
Yes.
Yes. There were so many technical glitches and things that went on. It was insane.
I remember that. I was talking to her right before we did our interview, and then she was kind of like working. Bless her. I mean, who knows what she deals with? And you know, she's right in the pot. So while it's, you know, cooking, so she's a very brave woman. I give her that. Who do you have your sights on? Who are you looking forward to? If you could interview anyone on this planet right now, who would be like, you know, an A-list type strategy?
Johnny Depp.
Interesting. And why?
About Hunter S. Thompson, you know, and the things that he's done. You know, Johnny Depp's done a lot of movies that have involved the occult, conspiracy, undercover police and all of this kind of stuff. He must have had some really amazing experiences doing his research and what have you. And Hunter S. Thompson was way out there. So I'd be really interested to have a couple of hours with Johnny Depp to just, you know, shoot the breeze and learn about his life and have a few laughs with him. I reckon it'd be awesome.
It's so hard because I think about stuff like that, and then I wonder, you know, where does MKUltra and that type of programming play into these actors? Because a lot of what I've heard is that a lot of these actors have just alters, and they just put them into alters to trigger them into acting. And it's like, you know, look at Britney Spears. I mean, have you seen the Dollhouse episodes? They're on Netflix. I don't know if you get Netflix in your country. I don't know if that's international or not, but
no, I've seen episodes of the Dollhouse. Yeah, the Joss Whedon one, the guy did what's it called, Firefly and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Same dude, yeah. did Dollhouse, I think.
Yeah, actually, I thought it was very well done. There was one episode where they depict a presidential type candidate who is, you know, controlled, and it's kind of spooky because I only started watching it about, I don't know, 6 months ago, and when I finally got far enough into it to see there's some validity to what they were rolling out through there, that chair in specific, when I first met Bill, he told me that what they, you know, used to wipe him before they released him was light, sound, and psychotropic drugs. And, you know, overstimulating his nervous system with light and sound. And, I described these chairs to him, and he thought that was really spooky, the fact that they show, the reality of, you know, the compartmentalization through data transfer into the personality. Like, that's just bizarre. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's how a lot of the Black Ops kind of keep their secrecy, is they have that type of technology to ensure memories are not retained around, you know, key strategic operations. And
well,
you know.
I'd inferred a different method of keeping their secrecy. It's by making all of this technology that they've already got fully public as fiction, so that when anybody says that it's real, they get accused of watching too much TV.
Sorry.
But I could be wrong.
Well, it's, you know, I'm actually looking forward to getting my hands on Bill in person. And, you know, we only had like basically 3.5 months, and we were pretty much strangers with this, you know, connection. Obviously, that it was something more there driving the trust, because I basically left Canada and jumped ship to get behind him and just document and observe as much as I could to protect him and keep him safe, and like just stand for all the courage that he was depicting. And it's not been an easy ride. I mean, we've, you know, previously talked about gang stalking. Well, that is definitely what he's endured for the last 14 years. And I had no preparation whatsoever. So I definitely know it when I see it now. And it's a crazy world to be a host. You know, you wouldn't think that the alternative media would be that important, but apparently we're being successful enough to cause enough of a stir to have to then suffer the COINTELPRO type peppering on the YouTube channels. And, you know, that's a part of the job I was not trained for. And I think the creative aspect that you show is probably the most attractive version of anyone in the alternative media that I have seen successfully execute to date, you know, to kind of counterbalance the stress of being in this type of arena. But it's definitely something I've got my eyes on. So let's talk creativity and what's going on in that world of yours, because it's something that I really quite admire.
Well, we have a track that I loaded you there, didn't I?
Steve, is that ready to go? Can we
do it right now?
Okay.
Well, let me just preface this by saying that this is, we just did this last night, like off the top of our head. My friend's playing guitar. I'm singing. Everything you're seeing is a complete and utter freestyle. This is two musicians jamming for 3 minutes. All right? So let's roll that.
Ooh, in the summertime, in the city, when the girls are oh so pretty. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty, I feel like I'm walking on the clouds. When the sun shines down, when the girls are looking so pretty, with all those nice fresh fruits and vegetables, tended by vendors on the side of the street, making a living in the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty. The heat and temperature is rising, oh, faster than your spine can contemplate.
I think, you know, this is it. I think that if the internet were to become what you said, where, you know, people would have more time to invest in doing and being what they want, the only reason we would ever get together would be to celebrate the arts. And we would come together and we would be in each other's presence to physically experience what it's like to feel the music played live. And that was wonderful. That's amazing. I'm really impressed. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners.
Now, if you can show me another musician who can do something like that with no prep, nothing whatsoever, even being a little bit sleep deprived, point them in my direction, you know? I mean, I've been jamming for over a year with Mikhail there, and he's been jamming for over 30 years with people, and he's never been able to produce anything like he has with me, with anybody else, like not even close to it. There's something about me I'm able to get into a rhythm, and the words just come to me. It's really awesome, and it's a way of getting out all of this angst and stuff. Yes. Like that, you know. And we always record all of our jam sessions. Occasionally, we come up with really, really terrible songs. We just sit there and just go, "Oh my god, that's just how drunk were we?" You know, and but the rest of the time, man, we come up with some things that actually. That actually mean something, you know, that really say deep messages. And well, it's something that's missing from the music business, because yes, it's no longer about music. It's about yes, business.
Yeah, I there's one gal I follow from Canada. Her name's Estero, and she moved down to LA a few years ago. She was originally with the BEP. They loved her voice and they wanted her so bad, Black Eyed Peas. And she refused to sell out. And so they purposely set out to find somebody that could replicate her sound. And they found Fergie. She put out a song a few years ago called Musical Revolution. And she's like, "I'm so sick and tired." Anyway, so she's bringing it back out now, where she's just walking the streets in Hollywood Boulevard area and interviewing people that are tourists walking by, asking them if they've heard her music. If they think that there's a need for a musical revolution, where, you know, a more diverse, accurate example of artistic expression is allowed, where people aren't just falling prey to their, you know, producers or management directing their creative expression. And so I totally respect that, and I get it. I mean, I've been drawn to Beats Antique, who is a California band as well. And they have this amazing partnership with this gal, Zoe Jakes, who's a belly dancer, and she shows up at all of their live shows. And so you not only get this really cool, funky live music, but you get this visual eye candy of goddess expression. And I just like, it's really, I think, true art. And that is seeming to come back with all of the stress that is, you know, building with more and more truth coming out. The need for artistic expression is substantial. And one of the things that I love the most about what you're doing is that you're dominating with a professionalism, and then you're finding the time, you know, what are you managing? So what does your day look like? Take us through a Vinny day and like how much stuff you're actually having to manage on the go.
See, the problem is that it took me a day to tell you what I do in a day. but in a nutshell, planning stuff, events, protests, managing Facebook pages, posting stuff out, editing audio, editing video, uploading that stuff up to the website, changing archives around, and keeping in touch with all of these people on Facebook, looking at little bits of research, editing music, collaborating with people from and building websites.
Have you ever thought about doing a documentary or like some kind of reality?
I've done a couple of little mini documentaries. Thought about doing a reality TV show where we, you know, stick a spy cam on a politician when they're not looking and just, you know, air it on live stream or something until they notice.
Oh my god!
No, I just made that up off the top of my head. I wouldn't consider doing that. You know, that's a violation of the politician's alleged privacy.
Oh my god, that would be so good.
Listen, I mean, if we don't have any privacy rights, then why should they?
But that doesn't mean just because somebody murdered you that you can murder them or their family member, you know what I'm saying? Because might doesn't make right. And the problem is, I think we do have to because then you come into moral territory where if you're doing it to a bad guy because he's a bad guy, are you in the right? And whether or not he actually is the bad guy, or is he as bad as he thought, or what have you? I mean, we've got rules in society, and I think truthers should be sworn to uphold them. You know.
Well, I think also that politicians, bureaucrats, things like that, people that have anything to do with the public coffers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you don't have to expose them by going into secrets. They are held to a higher standard, but the fact is they don't actually have any of those standards, bro. And whoever told us that is, I don't know, maybe trying to lie to us so that we wouldn't look any closer, because that's the only reason. See, you don't actually need to violate their privacy in order to get all the evidence and goss on them, because they do it right in front of your face, okay? That's probably the same reason why the cops don't have cops parked outside my thing and don't have my house bugged and stuff like that. We've done sweeps, we can't find anything. It's because I put everything that I do up online anyway. They don't need to.
No.
Okay, and it's the same with me versus the politicians. They put their schedules up there. They put their policy up there. They put all of the stuff up there. And there's all manners of other stuff that we can dig up on them without breaking any laws, you know? I mean, right.
I'm glad that we know that Rob Ford smokes crack.
Oh, yeah, Canada at its best.
You know, if somebody wasn't bugging Rob Ford, then we would never have known that.
Yeah, see, and... it's the problem, isn't it? Because I can guarantee you people probably actually had something of that nature. And this also comes into the WikiLeaks argument too, doesn't it? Edward Snowden or Bradley Manning had never blown the whistle and revealed information that they shouldn't have to, if they didn't technically break laws or what have you, we wouldn't know that all of this stuff is going on. So let me see. If you break a law and it doesn't damage somebody – all right, like physically, or destroy any of their private property, is it still breaking the law under common law? No, it's not. So if it's defamation, like if it's lies, that actually really does destroy somebody's reputation and destroys their life, and they haven't actually done anything, there's no evidence to prove that, go right ahead. But if somebody's actually involved in real scumbaggery, all right, and you break the law in order to obtain the documents in order to prove it, then I think that's perfectly lawful. All right, I think it's perfectly okay to obtain things, just as long as nobody gets hurt and no private property is damaged.
The girl with the dragon tattoo. I was going to say there's a lot of predictive programming going into television shows right now that are encouraging vigilantism. But the vigilantism is much. Not in a line with what you just stated, that the truth or community should be upheld to uphold integrity, that we should not be willing to go cross boundaries, and that if we do, if it's not intentional, that, you know, we take the steps to reestablish boundaries.
Our strength lies in our restraint, not our barbarity.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Let's talk man talk. Tell me about that. How did that come together? This is really cool. This is a few episodes, one episode. What was it?
It looks like we're up to the. Oh, in fact, funny you should say that. Where in the heck is my calendar? Here we are. We have the Man Talk Project, episode 5, with David Whitehead on truthfrequencyradio.com.
Love him. Fellow Canadian, represent. Whoop, whoop. Love David.
Yes. Yes. That's tomorrow at the same time as this show started today. So,
awesome. Okay. And you did one with Randy Moggins, who's another, you know, close to my heart. He was somebody that was integral into the get-go. I mean, I did not expect to leave Canada, jump behind a Black Ops and get a radio show. I didn't know any of this was going to come together, but Randy was very much part of that. So how did this come together, and what's the premise?
Well, as most things in my life come together, it was by a mistake that I made and I mistakenly scheduled two guests for the same day, and I didn't know either of them or what either of them were about. So I said, well, frack it, let's just have a conversation like 2 minutes before the show actually starts. We'll find out what each of their fields of research are. And then we just start talking, and it's like, oh yeah, yeah, well, no problem. I think we can jam with this. Let's do it. And then we had a show, and we started talking about being men during that show. I called the episode the Man Talk Project. You know, after the Montauk Project, the Montauk Project is different from the Man Talk Project because it's about how you can teach somebody to speak with a Jamaican accent. You know, it's the Montauk Project, and. fifth episode coming up, you know, because we figured out something during that interview that there really isn't a whole lot of man talk going on out there.
I know. That's great. I love it. I totally support that. That's awesome. Love it. Love it. Love it.
It's kind of neat. I might want to get involved.
Oh, I knew that was coming, Steve.
Because Vinny, I've heard your stuff a while ago and I know you got an awesome show. I've been busy. I haven't heard it recently. I also don't know.
He's a jammer too. He's in a band.
Yes, I am. But, but I'm just saying that like some sort of man talk thing, that sounds like it works.
That's up your alley, Steve. I love it. I knew you were, that's kind of why I brought it up actually. You
know, divine like, masculine.
Yes. I think that's great. I think that is very important actually. Especially
with the Rockefeller CIA financed rise of feminism and the 52% divorce rate and the 97% illegitimacy rate in black communities. Yeah, I think men being men might actually need to be brought back, because what's happening now is that you're either a man being demonized on television or a woman being worshipped. And I think, whoa. That's not only the opposite of what was happening. That's even worse. That's like double as bad. So now instead of having strong men and supportive women in both of their character really defined roles for a large extent, now you have weak men and overbearing women to a large degree. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. The things that were divine about women have disappeared, and the things that were divine about men have disappeared. What they've done, simply with the rise of feminism and the way that they've promoted it and done it, has actually destroyed both men and women's perception of themselves.
And you know what? A lot of people don't know that about Gloria Steinem, that she was part of a rollout through this, well, you know, where exactly it originated, but obviously the CIA had some involvement, but she was part of that to divide the family, and you know, it's controversial. It's a controversial topic. So I actually very wholeheartedly support this. And why I brought it up is because I knew Stevie would be down with it and think it was so dope.
Yeah. I'm just saying, this is why we have people like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton in high office in America.
We'll be right back after this.